Good evening, everybody.
Hello,
Hello.
party people.
Hello, political party people. No.
Yes, never late, never black-pilled,
never again. We're back.
Yes, on our, as you typically now refer to as our infrequent not-Tuesday stream.
Yeah, it's now, we're back on Monday, which actually puts us back to what the bio used to say, which is that we streamed every Monday and Thursday. I hadn't changed that for a while.
The OG people will know that Mondays used to be my stream.
Monday used to be Evelyn's stream.
Yes, Evelyn's corner.
Ooh, and Thursday, me and Trig used to stream. Well, yeah. You know what? There will be more Trig at some point. We'll be doing more It's Okay from the internet when we've got time.
We can organise a seance and summon a spirit.
Yes, exactly.
The internet old man.
Ooh. Internet old man. Ooh. But hello, friends. Hello, not sure. And hello to all of our returning members like English Upstart and Rick. We are still monetized somehow.
Yes. So if you want to, you can be a member for the channel and you get like the stickers and the silly stuff and you get to support us. Or you can... You can go through a super chat or the super stickers or whatever they call them.
Yes.
And if you don't want to give money that's going to get rinsed by YouTube tax, you can either go to the Ko-Fi, which is linked in the chat.
Yes.
Or become a member on the Substack. Which allows you to get these streams as a podcast with no ads in a way that you can download as well.
Yes, yes. I would recommend people check out your 2024 Survival Guide for UK Politics. That'll be quite salient for the rest of the stream.
I was going to say, I like to think how prescient this is from all the way back in January 14th.
Yes. Mm. But we'll have kind of a mix of stuff today. I've entitled this stream Zero Votes, the Futility of the Electoral Process, because as we currently stand... And as we'll show up as a little gag throughout the stream, I will say, quickly, I think I forgot to tell people to interact with the stream. You know what that means.
Yes.
Do drop a message in chat, do like it and stuff. It does help.
We want nothing more than all you people watching both live and retrospectively watching the VOD. Please let us know just how deep your love for the nation of Israel is in the chat.
Yes.
Do you love Israel more than even Nige does? I know we do, and I want to make sure that you too, chat, love Israel. For those small smattering of people that would be somewhat interested, I'm sure you're aware that the weather has turned shite.
Yes, the weather has been awful.
We had a scorcher for about 4 days,
yes.
And I even got a suntan and everything, and it was brilliant. Yes, Scottish people do tan.
With difficulty, yes.
Yes, with great difficulty.
You gotta leave on high for a while.
Yeah, with great difficulty. And now it's wank, so I hope you're... I know we said the election was going to happen in November.
Yeah.
What we meant is it was going to happen in November weather. It would feel like November, you see?
My prediction was as close as possible to the US elections. July's relatively close. They kind of held off.
But if it's a July that feels like
a
November,
it is a July that now feels like a November. So that's kind of where we're going with this.
But yes, this is, I may inform you, an anti-election broadcast.
Yes, welcome to our anti-election broadcast.
Mm.
This is not a party political broadcast. This is an anti-election broadcast.
Yes. Most adverts that you will witness about the election are about engaging in the democratic process. This one isn't.
Yeah, this one is not. This is about, by any means necessary, not participating in the democratic process, in quotes. I'm not going to go through the affirmation stuff. I'm going to create a separate video at some point entitled The Mass Psychology of Democracy, which is probably going to be on a Spoons channel, but we'll see if I ever get that finished. I just don't have time these days for certain things.
But that's small fries.
Yes.
Because did you know the Overton window is shifting?
Whoa, no!
Something here on the window! The Overton window is shifting. And the far right is being elected and popularised all across Europe. Zoomers are listening to a trendy song on TikTok, and this means the world has got to change.
Yes, the world is changing because the EU Parliament structure changed a bit.
Farage in the UK got Wilders in the Netherlands,
yes.
Marine Le Pen in France, soon to be Trump in America. It's the summer of Zionism, ladies and gentlemen. And it's going to be a scorcher.
We must remind you that everyone has come down with a case of election fever.
Why?
Certain things that will be highly controversial in this stream will be completely uncontroversial come July 5th.
Oh, of course.
But that is merely the environment we exist in. But this, this is your apex election fever warning. We are at DEFCON zero.
Yes, consider this stream almost a sort of prophylactic before the 4th.
I will say I did enjoy Woz's and Morgoth's little election fever stream. That was quite good. On the, one the little chat they had on Substack was quite good. But we're kind of going into really the antidotes to electoralism. And a lot of you I know have already stepped over democracy. You're already cool kids in the back of the bus with us. And for you,
we'll cigarette, man.
We'll partially explain to you why so many people have been so resubsumed within the democratic kind of mandate. In that, a lot of people they say that they don't believe in democracy, and then they default to what we refer to as the crayon drawing.
Yes, and a very bottom-up image of reality.
Yes.
Which is why they completely miss very obvious and plain things that, for example, we have discussed before, the blatant Americanization of British politics.
Well, before that, it's not just the Americanization of British politics, it's the Americanization of European politics.
Yes.
Really, what a lot of these far-right parties are emulating is the US Republican Party.
American culture war.
It's the American culture war. It's the US Republican Party. Specifically, it is quote-unquote Trumpism. In that way, the liberals are right.
The liberal media.
I'm afraid the liberal media hasn't been owned. It's been vindicated, but in the wrong way.
Oh,
in that Trumpism has taken over, but it's completely ineffectual neoliberalism. That's why.
Who would have thought that was going to happen?
Who'd have thunk that would happen? But right now...
Oh, sorry, yes, we had this. This
the cope is currently happening with France.
Yes.
National rally is ascendant. We'll get into it, but Farage has criticised Le Pen as too far right and too socialist for him.
Eric Zemmour is bouncing items all across France as we speak.
Yes, but really there's this big synchronicity, there's this big wave of elections this year that started with European elections, and it's coming through the UK elections. There'll be German elections. There'll be all kinds of elections this year. And really what this is the cycling in of what is American style right-wing populism into Europe.
It's almost
like a panacea.
Well, I was going to say, it's almost as if a number of states in Western Europe are starting to cycle in what was, in some regards, the American solution to woke political formulas.
Yes, it is the anti-woke world is here. And everybody has already written off Le Pen as another... It's really funny when you mention Le Pen. Nobody in the UK who is a right-winger who considers himself a dissident, in quotes, has anything nice to say about Le Pen anymore since her criticism of the AfD. It's very clear that she is one of these people who've been fit into, as we'll get into later, the governance box.
Shall we say she's a fascist of the Maloney archetype?
Yes, she is a fascist of the Maloney archetype. But
everything's okay, because we as Britons are going to be saved.
We're going to be saved. We're going to be saved by Zia Yusuf. You know what? You just read this bit and then I'll play the clip, eh?
Yes.
Dan Wooten.
This is Dan Wooten, dissident from GB News.
Too hot for GB News.
Muslim entrepreneur and former Tory Zia Yusuf just gave the speech of this election campaign for Reform UK and Nigel Farage. He quotes him, "This is a movement for British people of all races and faiths who love their country, a movement for those who want to see British values protected. A political star is born. The MSM desperately trying to deride reform should look at the breadth of its support, from Zia to Dan Wooten," who is, of course, a homosexual.
Yes.
Which plays no part in his views, I'm sure. "There is nothing racist or homophobic about this movement. You tell him, Dan."
Here we go.
"This is a movement for British people of all races and faiths who love their country.
I just learned
a movement for those who want to see..."
But don't you love your Vivek Ramsey way imitators?
Vivek Rama Swama.
Don't be Rama Rama, yes.
Yeah, that's the
Vivek, one. Don't be Rama Rama way. Don't you just love that we have the British melting pot now, that American politics has fully been imported to Britain, and now we have a right-wing populist party that is for British people of all races?
Well, not only do they deracinate ethnic solidarity by saying ludicrous sentences like British people of all races.
Yes.
Well, what does British mean there? It's people of all races. Is everyone British now?
There's some people who seem to be panicking.
We are Britons now.
Because this Zia Yusuf seems to be being positioned as some kind of post-Faraj reform figure, which is weird that people are already talking about that, but we'll see.
Who knows?
Who knows?
There's a further part I want to add here, though. It's maybe stating the obvious, but we, of course, know that this means that they want to redefine British as not just white people. But they go a step further, as they always do. It's not just that the values that used to exist in Britain should be respected.
Yes.
It's that British values are openness, tolerance, pluralism, what you might otherwise describe as the negation of values themselves.
It is, again, the civic crayon drawing. It's what people in their 50s and 60s remember being taught what Britain should be at school.
Mm.
It is what you are taught in, like, your year 8 civics class. And really, what you will get throughout this is this crayon drawing. It is this idea of the reset to the liberal ideal, to the meritocratic Britain.
My worry is, we've got this, and this is very inclusive, but where's the movement in Britain for Jewish people of all races? Come on!
Yes, We support Jewish people of
all races and colours and creeds and faiths.
Yes. But this really follows on from stuff we pointed out before, which is that Nigel Farage represents the Americanization of British politics. He represents a British politics that is more in tune with the Turning Point USA, Turning Point UK nexus, the growing influence of direct neoconservatism in the American mold in Britain. He really does represent that, as is demonstrated by his porous kind of career as a US media pundit. He's just the great poster child for it. And for those of you who want a bit more about what we've done the whole containment arc. If you guys aren't familiar with our stuff, start at the Henry Jackson Society streams and basically look at any of them that mention UK politics since then, because we've been trying to map out the network that's created this situation since a year ago.
Yeah.
We've been doing this in terms of specific...
I would say as well, some of the things like anti-woke and a post-woke world and some of the other streams also touch on this.
They do, but yes.
The general notion, and it's something that we have stated and restated time and time and time and time and time again, fundamentally... These people like Farage, these people who are in populist movements across Europe, understand themselves as operating in the position where they are there to be voted in to keep people like me and you, the viewer, the people who interacts with content like this and understands fundamentally what an ethnos is, what a true culture is, what it means to have a nation that's resilient and strong and not just belaboured with technology and brown people and hamburgers.
Yes.
And they're not there for you. And we'll go on to show this anyway.
Well, but... What I want to say is I want to sidestep something straight away, which is it doesn't matter if Nigel is our guy or not. It doesn't matter if he's a liberal pretending to be conservative or a conservative pretending to be liberal. Ultimately, the shape he has to move himself into to be legitimate within the electoral process makes him utterly defanged.
Yes.
And I will also be periodically reminding people that electoral politics isn't real.
Well, there's one thing he can't do that Starmer and Blair as a faction will probably do for years now.
Yes.
Play into right-wing ideas from the left, because when they do so, they don't get critiqued as people who turn into Nazis, do they?
No.
But when you're on the right, even only in a narrative sense, and you appeal to ideas that are further right of this, the first thing that happens to people, well, where's your limiting principles there to stop you just becoming national socialists?
It's the narrative here is that reform is there for the disenfranchised voter.
Yes.
And in the same sense that Trump will save American democracy by overcoming the steal this year, because he's being cycled in. We all see it now. It's all very obvious. We'll get into that a little bit at the end. But Nigel Farage is here to make the people who have become disenfranchised with the entire system by the Tory party reinvest in it, reinvigorate it. It is about energizing the dissident population of Britain to once again take part in the electoral system. It's begging them, pleading them, lend Nigel your vote, subsume yourself once more in the mass and participate in the ceremony of democracy. And we're here to demonstrate to you the reality of what that will look like. We're here to give you the hangover before the party.
Yes. We'll try and not be too long-winded with this stream as well, but no. I think we could maybe get to a fundamental framing of what we are trying to look at this evening.
Yes.
I thought, through conversations that we have had about this and conversations I've seen other people have about this, is there is, at best, three likely scenarios, varying in likeliness, one might suggest. I don't know if we want to scroll through those just now, or you want to quickly see to these?
I will quickly say, before we get into this little section here, I will thank Coney Current Year for the £5. He says, electoral politics doesn't matter, and it's Zionism all the way down, but I'm still going to the party in London to celebrate zero seats.
The cathedral event, yes.
Yeah. It'd be nice to see people, but I don't really have, you know, I don't really have time at the moment just to go down for a party. I did consider going down for something else, but that's a different story for a different time. What would you say to disinterested voting, like voting for accelerationism? The Tories have done a terrible job, so why not continue? I just think, really, that ultimately people need to remove themselves from the ceremony of it all.
Yes, it's something we'll talk about later on, but there are two options.
Well, three options.
I was going to say for this there are three. But in terms of voting, you either vote for Starmer, and we have the world's highest turnout that 100% votes for one politician because it makes democracy look like a joke.
Yeah.
Or nobody votes.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that, because the more fundamental question is, what happens with Nigel Farage and reform and fundamentally the elites behind the electoral curtain that represent what is the Tory party?
Yes, what actually happens? People are having this euphoric moment of, we've done it, we've basically, you know, first of all, spoiler alert, the Tory party will not be destroyed. We'll get into that again later, but this is not actually going to destroy the Tory party in any real sense. But the way people are looking to electoral solutions as a saviour is disappointing, first of all, but really it's not logically consistent because people don't think about what is actually going to happen. Shall we get into the first scenario here then?
Yes. Maybe we should see what the three are and then tackle them one at a time.
I know, it's still, well, the three are just, you know, we've got three scenarios, reform under perform. Reform, perform as expected, or they, you know, reform as expected. And you've also got reform overperforming.
Yes.
But there isn't much of a window between all of these three. Really, as we've said before, a lot of people are going, oh, could they, oh, could they, oh, could they? But there is a very narrow set of likely outcomes from this, each of which presents us with different conundrums, and we have different worked examples for how this won't work. But we are quite far removed from, let's say, a hypothetical situation of a Nigel Farage prime ministership.
So let's get into the first one, because I think this is the easiest and it's something we have tackled before.
Yes.
Reform, as a party, it just doesn't do well. It doesn't even live up to what the polls say they're going to do. Maybe not even in the demographics that they're supposedly going to overperform in.
Yes.
And you end up in a situation where ultimately all the energy, all the money, all the resources that have gone into the reform campaign that we've seen over the last month or so is once again just a vehicle for Farage as a celebrity. A sort of strange meta-political character who's there to gee people up when it's convenient, but as and when is required, he sort of, well, just disappears off into the background, as he did with UKIP. as he did with the Brexit Party.
Well, as he did with Reform. It just turned into Reform when he first left it. But Nigel Farage has no trouble leaving a political party to save his political career. He is not somebody who would be considered ride or die. I would be very, very cautious if he was involved in my political movement, because he's somebody who has spent, and we've said this consistently, every time we've talked about Nigel Farage, I will hammer this point home. His entire career has been harnessing and then dissipating rightward political energy in Britain.
I mean, how... It's actually a miracle in and of itself that a man could be involved in a party, be essentially the face of it for the most part, take it from a fringe group that maybe gets a couple of hundred thousand votes at most, to in the smattering of a number of years to, what was it, 6 or 7 million votes, yes, something to that extent. And then 3 years later, UKIP is an organisation with about 15 people. And no one turns up to their conferences. And what UKIP candidates are you going to vote for today? Or on the 4th, shall we say? Where are they?
It is something that we should consider, that really the inertia is against them in many ways. There's a lot of people who might say that they'd vote for Farage, but there might also just be the shuffling boomer masses, which is actually what pollsters are kind of scared of. The pollsters are actually worried that they're overhyping Reform, and that really what might happen is that the Tories might get their magical kind of 100-seat buffer.
Yeah.
It might not be a complete disaster. Farage, you know, might get 3-4 MPs, maybe even just 1 or 2 if it's a little bit of a fall down, and that would make them politically a bit of a dead dog.
Well, it wouldn't be a waste of time, though, would it? Because what happened after this happened? People all got rallied up in support.
Based Boris.
Yes, for the same issues, over the same problems, by some of the same people.
Yeah.
However, the direction was no longer vote for Nige, it was vote for base Boris.
Well, it was
base Boris, everyone.
The Tory party basically fell apart due to Brexit already. It fell apart under Theresa May with the traitors parliament and all of that, and the Boris Johnson. And this is really just people, as they did during the Brexit vote, subsuming themselves in democracy again. Here's Nigel Farage, you know, his excuse for quitting UKIP was, you know, the possible involvement of Tommy Robinson and the anti-Muslim extremism, as the other one said, of the Palliser Party and its 2018 guys.
So he basically put Gerard Batten in a position where he was denounced...
Yes, as a racist.
Yeah, as a racist.
An Islamophobe.
By the person who used to run the party.
And Tommy Robinson, who is an Israeli intelligence state asset, is somebody who is in the puppet show of politics in 2018, was too extreme for Nigel Farage. Many people now consider him limp containment, which is quite a funny turn up for the Bucks, but here we are.
It's funny to see if whether or not these two will bump into each other again at some point in the near future.
Well, that's what we think will happen if they underperform. Basically, it's UKIP 2.0. UKIP was up to 15, 16, 17% of the electorate nationally by some polls, and it actually manifested about 14.5%. It did very well in the 2015 election. And it did very well in the European elections as well, which...
But where is it now?
Yeah.
What importance does it serve as a lasting political structure? The second sort of, shall we say, the second most likely outcome, realistically, is that Reform does roughly what the polls are saying, isn't on its own merits able to form a opposition.
Yes.
Due to the Tories still performing, say, a 60, 70 seat level. Reform, you know, let's pick a number out of the hat, 20 or 30 seats. You know, it's bigger than the Greens. It's maybe bigger than the Lib Dems. You know, what happens in this situation?
It would be bigger than the Lib Dems. Now, the electoral maths here is Reform is expected to get 7 seats. It is mathematically difficult outside of a big shift for it to get more. If there's a big shift, it could get up to 80. It's really, there's a real wide band of what it could get.
This is what I'm saying, it's about the 20-ish range, if you get what I mean. Because there's at least
Reform is expected is 7. They're currently predicted to get 7. I'd say that overperforming would be 20 seats.
Yes.
You must temper your expectations in that Reform underperforming is them getting 1 to 3 seats.
No, I gather.
Them performing as expected is them getting seven seats.
Yes.
It's not orders of magnitude. And really, people are getting incredibly ahead of themselves when they talk about Reform as a Tory party alternative. It doesn't matter what your vote share is, as the Green Party always complains about. Mm. It matters how many MPs you have. Well, that's how you get your funding.
The point I was going to make, so that the people listening to this can understand why we've picked these three scenarios,
yes,
is that in the first one, it just is a damp squib. You know, in 6 months' time, no one cares about it. Nigel Farage goes back to being a commentator on Trump and the Libs getting owned. In this situation, in number two,
yes,
we are trying to pick at what is the what happens in the grey zone between complete failure and becoming in the official opposition.
Yes.
Which at least in theory is the massive overperforming result that everybody would want out of him.
Well, possibly I think what happens is that Farage gets a bit bored with it and exits the party for a second time.
Yes.
I think in both these scenarios, he leaves relatively quickly because it's the election is what gets the eyeballs on Reform. Outside of an election, Reform is just the right-wing Green Party.
Yeah, he appears to me as a man who's a fantastic campaigner.
Yes.
And not necessarily a great day-to-day politician.
No. And again, the point is that this is from 2015. 5 million votes, two seats. Smaller parties demand a change in the rules. UKIP won 3.8 million votes, the Greens 1.1 million. But they only won one MP each in the election. In Margate, there is growing support for electoral reform, which is never going to happen.
Mm.
We're not going to get and I hope we don't actually get a proportional representation system, because that would add the European Bourras-style 15-party coalition paralysis politics of continental Europe. It'd be miserable here. We'd have this even more confusing political landscape in which you are voting for coalitions of coalition parties and you'd have no idea what the hell is going on in your own political system. At least the first past the post and gives us, you know, a slightly less complex crayon drawing.
Yes. Well, in some regards, what it does is it mitigates the two possibilities that we are trying to suggest are the only ways out of this within democracy.
Yes.
Either nobody votes and you still get a party that can basically wipe its way in as a major majority because no one else in other constituencies are voting, or the situation of trying to clog it all full of people all voting for the one thing doesn't quite give you the result you'd expect.
The problem with also Reform's MPs is that if Reform as a brand becomes corroded in some way, like Douglas Coleswell did, the only ever UKIP MP, by the way, he quit the party to sit as an independent. And they're very vulnerable to either defections to the Tories, if they are able to become a political force again that's polling very highly, or at least compared to Reform, or if you end up with them, which is what they do, having local candidates. If you're a local candidate under the Reform umbrella, a lot of them switched really quickly from UKIP to Brexit Party to Reform to independent.
Well,
because it became the more advantageous political umbrella.
I would say the situation in that regard is maybe even worse, because there's a specific sort of subset of groups that are very heavily involved in Reform at the moment, which we'll get to in a moment, but it would seem to me that many of those people, if they were to defect from Reform, would not go to the Tories, but would maybe consider actually defecting as Labour MPs, especially if Starmer is able to make himself look like a competent actor, we think he will.
Yes. I don't think Farage will be cycled in 2029, no, but we'll go over the scenario in a sec of him being the official opposition. But I want to impress upon people what the likely situation will be for Reform on July 5th. There will be a small political party with seven MPs, most likely. They will sit in Parliament and make no decisions. They will have no real influence. They will not be the official opposition. They will not not have destroyed the Tory party.
And with only seven seats,
yes,
fundamentally, even the Tory party with its waning legitimacy,
yes,
it's probably not even worth, even if they thought it was a positive to have those seven seats, I don't think they would bother with the hassle of trying to make it all work as a coalition, because there'd be no need to it.
No.
At least in the situation with David Cameron and Nick Clegg, there was a need to squeeze in enough seats for a majority.
Yes.
And what happened in that situation? How did they make it work? David Cameron very briefly wore the face of a Lib Dem MP.
Yes.
They brought Nick Clegg up and they made all these promises about scrapping tuition fees, doing stuff for the culture for young people. This was all the rage and the messaging through that brief moment when they had to force that coalition through.
The problem is there will be... But
as soon as the coalition granted them the democratic mandate, as one might say, they dropped the Lib Dem mask. Who's to say that in this same situation, maybe they do decide that 7 or 10 seats that Reform get are vital in having some sort of sway against whatever majority Labour has. Yes. What stops Tory party 2 months after making everyone feel like that coalition was amicable, they just drop the mask and return to what they were?
It just doesn't make sense for them to get together with Reform as a minor party like that. I think really we've seen the high point Reform support here. And after the election, as the recriminations start about who let Labour win so big, the Reform Party with its 7 MPs, some of which, you know, some of their candidates have already begun to defect, as we'll get to later, with its 7 seats will be seen as a runt party, as not a national party, as not a party with the political machinery to really win. And it will be under immense pressure to step aside, especially if there is, as we'll get into, a resurgent Tory party. But the third option here is that the Reform Party overperforms.
You get 0 seats.
Not zero seats, but I would say what overperformance for the Reform Party looks like is them getting higher vote percentage than the Conservatives, but a far lower number of MPs.
I would actually say, for the sake of giving them the steel man argument, right? Let's suggest that, you know, it's a ridiculous overperformance.
Yeah.
No one saw it coming. Reform gets 80, 90 seats. The Tories are knocked back to maybe 30 or 40 at most. You know, let's try and work out, even given that steel man case, does this still work? And the fundamental problem that you sort of dragged up straight away with us is, well, you just end up being a Maloney.
Well, the problem then is that if they do become the official opposition, if Farage does wag the political dog and become the right-wing force in this country, then you have to become a party that can govern, and in quotes, and then you end up in Maloney world.
Yes.
You end up with, you know, the best-case scenario is that we now have a right-wing populist party that is the second most popular party in Britain. But the most popular party in a lot of European countries is this right-wing, Republican-style populist party. So the best-case scenario for Reform, if Reform overperform massively, completely overkill and destroy the Tory party, if there is 0 seats, the best-case scenario is you end up with your own Brothers of Italy, your own National Rally, your own MAGA. He is British MAGA. He is, at least in potentiality, British Le Pen and Maloney. Well, he fills that role.
This is what they had people shouting at the conference in the NEC in Birmingham the other day.
Yes.
Make Britain great again.
Yes.
I mean, it's all there. Why is it that people like Raheem Kassan and all these individuals that were all the way back then in 2016 involved with all the Trump stuff and MAGA and all this quote-unquote cultural movement that was supposed to be a bottom-up thing that spawned with that, which we know nowadays was not.
Yes.
Why are they still hanging around?
The thing is, even if Reform doesn't formally combine with Reform, it will informally combine with them, because Reform won't inherit the Tory party machinery. The fixed-in-place machinery will inherit Reform as a skin to wear.
Well, yes, this is the fundamental point, I think, that's really the crux of our whole issue with any electoral strategy.
Yes.
That what the Tory party is not just the electoral face. The legitimacy of the ruling elites that make up that faction, whether or not they have legitimacy now or legitimacy again in some other future period, they don't garner that legitimacy from electoral results. No. The electoral results are a backwards imputation of the legitimacy that they are able to display.
Yes.
And in doing so, the Tory party in Britain is an institution that has been around for nearly 2 centuries, century and a half.
Yes.
It's comprised of thousands, if not tens of thousands of people. Think tank organisations all around the wing-wang. They've got media placements here and there. There's a massive patronage network that sits up and above it that is permanent. It's like the bureaucracy. It's like the Tony Blair Institute. It's like any other body that is, I suppose, unelected. That massive media sphere, that massive sphere of elites and people who have experience in the civil service and border force and blah, 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 no matter how bad they are at their job. The Tory party has those. Reform does not. And what happens fundamentally is the Tory machine adopts the electoral base of reform. And Nigel Farage becomes the man, once again, who manufactures consent for Tory elites that you can't get rid of. You can't unelect.
No, and the problem is that people talk about Farage being quote-unquote secretly based, and we insist it doesn't actually matter if it is or not. The public face he presents isn't even like a Maloney or a Le Pen. He is not somebody who advertises himself or sells himself on his far-right credentials. He's somebody who is... You know, he's doing the sensible centrist thing. He's doing the centre-ground thing. I've done more than anyone else to defeat the far right. It's been something he's been saying for almost a decade. Nigel Farage calls himself the Billy Graham of politics and believes his right English populism can destroy the Conservatism. Again, it's populism.
But don't you understand? He has to frame himself against the BNP and against all these other radical people because that's the only way they'll be electable.
Well, the whole point is that he isn't his our favourite outlet, Unheard, as edited by one of the Freddies. Nigel Farage, Marie Le Pen will be a disaster for France. He's actually talking about economic policies, but really what he says is that he needs to be more like Maloney.
Yeah. I'll go from the one above there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, actually, let's go up another bit, because there's another interesting section there about Liz Truss.
Okay.
Earlier this week, the Bank of England warned in its June financial stability report that an RN election victory in France would threaten global financial stability and have a damaging effect on the British economy. This followed fears among economists that Le Pen's policy proposals, including low taxation and extensive spending, would significantly worsen France's ongoing debt crisis. The country's current finance minister, Bruno Le Maire, suggested that France could face a Liz Truss-style scenario. Why does he sound like us?
Yeah.
If the RM were to reach power, while economists have argued that the European Central Bank would be likely unable to intervene in the event of a full-blown French financial crisis.
If you go outside of the acceptable limits of politics, in quotes, the financial class will destroy you. Because they can.
Well, how do you fix that then, Nigel?
Yes.
RN President Jordan Bardella claimed earlier this month that the party would be willing to cut €3 billion from France's payments to the European Union, arguing the less we give to the EU, the more we can forward money to the real French economy. I mean, that sounds like good Euroscepticism, I thought.
Yes, it does.
Farage would be in support of that, but no. In additional comments to Unheard, Farage cited Giorgia Meloni as an example of a right-wing leader in Europe whom reform could learn. Now, did she lessen immigration to Italy?
No.
Or did she increase it again?
I think she increased it. I think she started importing them at source.
She's brought her party, Brothers of Italy, into the 21st century. He said, some of the more radical Italians might not like it, but she's been a very good thing and she's made her
party electable. This is the crux of why we are talking, not of zero seats, but of zero votes.
Yes.
Because the idea of being electable turns you into Giorgia Meloni. She is the electable right-winger in that she is a neoliberal cog. And that is the acceptable face. Again, Nigel Farage, in his own words, I would like to be, and I'd like my party to be, more like Giorgia Meloni. Again, welcome, Maloney world. There's no escape.
This is even on a personal level, yeah. Right? This is one of my major issues with reform. You've got little Zoomers running around, basically making like little Dark Age flash wave montages of Farage. You know, you might as well have the Sonnenrads and all that on it as well, because it's essentially what they're trying to appeal to.
Yes.
And we're told time and again, the people in the background are so based, they're pushing them. And yet... the messaging is always contradictory. You know, the direction seems aimless. This is why we question the fact that the only purpose for this whole damn thing is to be a platform for Nigel Farage and his ego. Because it's not entirely a platform for immigration. It's not entirely a platform for the ECHR or any other single issue. It wants to be both a full scope sort of party that has sensible policies whilst also being radical, and fundamentally in doing so, you tie yourself up knots and you end up nowhere because you're not the ruling party that gets to set the regime anyway.
Well, I have bad news for all of you. You can't kill the Tory party. At least you can't kill it electorally.
You cannot.
We have covered, like I said, refer to our previous works, the Tory Octopus. The Tory party is not a political party. It is a machine.
I would also refer people very heavily back to my 2024 Surviving the Wilderness.
Yes, we already mentioned that in the beginning.
Essay. No, I'm just because it's very pertinent to this, because it makes you deal with the fundamental question. You know, what happens when the Tories lose?
Yes.
Do people think that they all just hang their hats up and walk away until they're governing again? I mean, does the 1922 committee sort of disbanding? Oh, well, until next time. No, it's a machine and it runs day in, day out. Doing things.
Yes.
It's still, even as a party that is not elected, it still engages in the process of manufacturing consent in regards to democracy as a whole system, not as a party
Again,
system.
The problem I find is most people default to their year 8 education about political parties when they think about what will happen, because they don't understand how political parties work. They understand how they should work. They might have read a Wikipedia article, but very few people understand how the Tory party functions.
And
it functions as an extension of the security state, of various moneyed interests, of various central banks, of various political interests, and also ethnic lobby groups and factions within Whitehall and the civil service itself. It is the default party of British governance, and as such, it doesn't really exist on its membership.
It's, do you know what it is? It's like looking at a hospital and thinking that all the work is done by the doctors.
Yes. Yes, it very much is, yes.
And there's a sort of simple point to be made here. Only, you know, as this article points out, in December 15th, 2019, was it described as the fact that Labour, through the actions of Jeremy Corbyn and the more radical wings, those dangerous anti-Semites,
yes.
bad people, they had made Labour unelectable.
With the
here we are in 2024, and I'm not sure about you, but Labour looks like the electable party.
The
to
most
me.
Electable party. The point is that you can go from, you know, the complete failure of the Tory party, but Labour failing even harder in 2019, to a situation where you have the Tory party in its continual state of meltdown that it's been in since the Brexit vote. Let's be fair.
Yes,
the Tory party has been melting down since 2015. And it's just the Labour Party hasn't had an electoral footing because it's been purging itself of its non-governance members, let's say.
Mm.
It's very clear that Jeremy Corbyn was never meant to be Prime Minister because it wasn't in the script.
Do we suggest that in its time in lieu,
yes.
the Tory party pairs back the governance and only remains as government?
Yes. Well, the whole point is that, you know, will Labour's left-wing purges affect its ability to govern? You could really see this in 5 years with the Tory party coming into its next election. It's got a new leader. It blames everything on Rishi Sunak and the competence of Liz Truss. And they've got the backing of the business people. And things have gone okay for Starmer, but not quite as well as people thought. And they get 160 seats. They don't do very well.
And then Starmer gets cycled out. A Gordon Brown
gets cycled out.
No, a Gordon Brown character walks in, and there's a recession or some sort of national disaster, or there's a lockdown or some sort of climate event. Whatever the fuck happens, it matters not what the event is. The point is that using events as and when they arise, or even if they may be pre-planned to some regards, matters not, because they have total narrative dominance. And when these events arise, they go, well, what could we do here? Let's ditch these people that everyone's bored of, cycle back in a group of elites whose legitimacy is in some regards waning because they have not governed in so long.
Yes.
And let's make them look like the smart guys again.
What will happen is that the Tory machinery will either survive or absorb reform.
Yes.
And in doing so, it guarantees itself to be back in power again. Because Labour will eventually run out of political capital, just as the Tory party has run out of political capital. This is a symptom of them being in power for too long.
Yes.
This is why they cycle governments in and out.
Well, it's a symptom of being in power in a democracy for too long.
Yes, it's a symptom, yes, because they're not meant to rule properly. They're not meant to govern. They're meant to do governance.
Yes.
which is a very... As soon as that language trick is pointed out to you, you see it everywhere.
Yes.
Because a lot of people... Again, we'll get to that later, but I think that's a very good observation by Samuel Goh there, is the use of governance, which is crept in everywhere.
We'll work our way towards that.
We will. But just a quick point. Party membership in the UK is tiny. The Tory party, along with every other party in Britain, really has dispensed with its membership.
I mean, look at that. The Conservative graph there is...
Yes.
That's actually... I might have to have a greater look at that, because it seems to me like understanding the rules of democracy and mass politics...
Yeah.
Look at the weapon they wielded as an active mobile membership.
Yes.
And then proceeded to dissipate that time and time again, going to war with Germany, Suez Canal, oil crisis, Thatcher fucking things up, gay marriage, lockdown. I mean, I would think if you took this graph all the way out to 2024, the blue line would essentially be on the floor.
Yes. Yes, it would be. And it's a point, though, that really political parties don't require members.
No.
They don't require people. There is a tiny veneer of people to keep the illusion of political organisation in this country alive. It is an illusion on life support, because political parties aren't made up of members. They aren't democratic instruments. They are machines.
Mm.
And they are machines meant to interface with a much larger machine.
Yes. This is what I'm saying about the fact that it's not about electoral performance of one or the other parties.
No.
It's about all of them working together to create the ample amount of kayfabe to make the electoral process itself seem legitimate. And of course, what you get is people in the media playing ball to those narratives.
Yeah.
Now, this Financial Times article that was shared around to me and a bunch of other people, I would imagine, about a week or so ago, if you read the face of it, it looks like the Tory donors are out.
Yes.
They don't want to be involved. They're pulling their money away from the Tory party. However, if you archive this page and you look at it in full, you very quickly begin to realise that this trio of donors they are talking about are actually quite big donors. They give about £250,000 a year to the Conservative Party, which is about the most you can as a regular donation. They will carry on doing so, but they will not give an extra pledge for Rishi Sunak's campaign. But I think word for word somewhere in this article it does say exactly to the effect of, but we would give extra money towards a campaign of some other Tory MP after the election process. So these are the moneyed up donors, the patrons that help the Tory party be a governing body.
I think a lot of them want to leave their financial salvos for the rebuilding period and having a say in the leadership election.
Exactly.
That's what this it's it really is them kind of doing a bit of financial hibernating. This is just funny. This is just from June 2024. Nigel Farage is wrong. If the Tories move right, they'll be out for 20 years. I think if there is a merger or an adoption of reform, the narrative will be, because there's got to be probably two Labour governments, there is, the narrative will be that they've moved too far right, and look at what happened during the Tories' wilderness years. They experimented with being the anti-immigration party. They experimented with moving right, moving left, moving all over the place.
We were going to give you Brexit.
Yes, and they ended up as the consensus Cameronite One Nation Conservatives, which is basically just Blairism.
Mm.
And a Farage in his current guise is unelectable. Not because people don't like him, but because he can't interface with the system well enough.
Yes, and this was our whole point a couple of weeks ago in regards to talking about Starmer.
Well, everyone was like, oh, you know, the Conservatives were destroyed for losing their values in 1997. Who would vote for them if they just moved left? And it turns out everybody, when Labour runs out of political energy.
Yes.
All the Conservative Party has to do is survive and wait for Labour to run out
isn't
of
it,
political
isn't
energy.
It funny? It's almost like there's a sort of conspiracy between the parties there, that at the time that the Tory party decides for one reason or another, to run left.
Yes.
As far as it can go. The entire Labour Party gets on a plane and flies left at some sort of ridiculous speed to almost sort of outflank the Tories on their own leftism, which is a sort of bizarre juxtaposition, I feel. But there's a fundamental sort of point to be made here. And it's something that's stressed time and again in a book we rather enjoy, C.A. Bond's Nemesis.
Yes. The point is that party politics is about patronage. It's about having a teat to buckle from. The Tory party, especially so, is a party of patronage. The reason why the Tory party is so powerful is because of who its patrons are, not because of who its membership is.
Exactly. Do you want to read this one and then I'll do the second?
Oh, yes, I can read this one. This is from, I believe, page 153 of C.A. Bond's Nemesis, although that's in the e-reader version we've got, so it might not be in your version. If you, I say that like everyone has C.A. Bond's Nemesis at home. No political change can be predicated on organic revolt from the ground up. Revolutions and popular movements emphatically do not rise to success without patronage. And anyone under illusions on this point would do well to compare the singular success of the Arab Spring protesters, the complete not a failure of the French Yellow Vest movement. You remember them?
Remember
Yellow Vest?
Gilets Jaunes.
The Yellow Vest protests lasted significantly longer than the Arab Spring protests and covered a far greater area, and yet their impact was inconsequential for the simple reason that one set of protesters had patrons and the other did not.
CIA.
See, also, you know, we always refer to it our White March stream.
Yes. Furthermore, I think this is from a different section slightly further on in the book, yes, where he's sort of concluding on his view of de Juvenel as a whole. The modern liberal order, an order revealed by Juvenel as a hyper-centralised one that has been patronising cultural trends and political theories in adherence to this hyper-centralisation, has no incentive to offer patronage and institutional existence to a body of thought which exposes this very process of power. It is a fallacious belief in the natural, anarchistic flowering of culture independent of logistical infrastructure, a belief propagated by this very same system, which allows this process to occur without the recognition of the system's inhabitants that they are determining culture by their infrastructural support of specific bodies of thought, presumably, of course, over others.
Yes, C.A. Bond's, if you're having trouble cutting through that, what he's saying there is that an organisation like the Tory party is the shape it is, has the policies it does, and does the things it undertakes because of who its patrons are.
Mm.
And if reform becomes the official right-wing opposition of Britain, its patrons will be the same patrons as the Tory party had. It will be incentivized to undertake the exact same narratives and act in the exact same way, because that's why the Tory party behaves how they did.
I mean,
you must fundamentally disconnect the actions of political parties from the electoral process. Otherwise, you will continuously be wrong.
Yeah, let's look at it from the position of a legatum institute,
yes,
or a Paul Marshall. You have three steps. You create a giant media sphere, like GB News and Unheard and all the crap around that, that exists as a peripheral media conglomeration that isn't officially part of your political party, but always speaks well of it and always speaks to its narratives. You use this giant media machine to point to the public and to the people in your party yourself where you want opinions to be in the future. You then take some renegade charismatic figure like Nigel Farage to be the trusting face for these values that you have promoted through this greater network and through this greater system of patronage. You get the, yes, populace at large to then act, fundamentally crystallise those values in terms of propaganda and act on them for Farage. You then open the space up in the final third stage, come and dominate it yourself.
People who have a problem with this, a lot of people will say we're being cynical and paranoid, do not internalise the fact that electoral politics isn't real. We keep repeating this because people cannot seem to get their head around the wider implications and extrapolation outwards of the fact that electoral politics isn't real. When you vote a different political party into power, in quotes, you don't change the patronage of politics in Britain. You don't change who the moneyed interests are. You don't change who the powered interests are. You do not change the shape of the system. You do not change the permanent bureaucracy. And you don't change who is within it. Fundamentally, what you are saying when you tell people to, you know, to trust in reform or to just back for, you know, to protest vote or just do it to destroy the Tory party, you are still buying into the idea that electoral politics is real. That was our fundamental problem, even though I thought it was good fun. And yes, I would like to see the Tory party at least battered from this. The problem is that zero seats is an electoral framing. It buys into the fact that the election has a real and tangible effect on politics that is sincere, in that if the public attack the establishment, they must respond and change. Whereas what we saw with the Brexit vote is they turned around and they punished Britain.
Yes.
And ultimately what might happen is that for its sins, the British public may, when they eventually are cycled back into power, be quite consciously punished by elements of the Conservative Party.
Well, and how do we know this all? How can we say with such certainty that we know how this is all going to go across a long enough span of time? Because, as you say, we have fundamentally internalized a strong view of power.
Yes.
A view of systems as patronage, as top-down, and strictly top-down. And fundamentally, this means that the game is always rigged. The game is rigged so that the results, even if they do seem shocking and really Overton window shifting, are still insignificant in the face of the regime itself. I don't know if you want to quickly...
Oh, yes, I'll quickly read some super chats. I read your message, but thank you again for the £2 current year. D's bit of rough, £2, says it's also cringe. Can Arthur just wake up already? A woo. I believe there's an a woo there. Fake YouTuber for $10. Thank you for that. I believe there's a sticker in there as well. Found your channel recently. My daughter and I have been binge-watching. Thanks for all the great topics. As American, it's hard to get criticisms of the Empire within the Empire. Thank you. Yes, great comment. Thank you. And I hope you're enjoying it, and I hope that none of our stuff has aged too badly.
Yes, and then Louis Shaw, Moffat, Solar Maximum, Minimum Lads, Elite Knowledge Power. Let's not start talking about what the sun's doing to people. We've got a long way to go.
Yeah, we've got a long way to go before we can talk to it about the Solar Maximum stuff. But
there's a little aside point that we want to discuss here as well.
It's not aside, I think it's a very central point. What happens as reform is turned into a mainstream legitimate party, in quotes, is that they must display ability for governance.
Yes.
Governance is the buzzword of the managerial state.
Yes.
They don't govern like a government does. They undertake governance, which is a euphemism and is used to represent the neutral government process. It's like the flat people of government.
Yeah, it's the British values of government. But there was a nice little thread by Semyogog on this.
Just Semyogog here from a while ago, but he's just talking about, this is from the UK's Open University, is how you know anyone using the term governance is a cunt. They openly declare it's about extra governmental impositions, wrapped up here fittingly in the necessary and inevitability of climate change.
The failure of the state to deal effectively, I don't know if you want to crib that in a bit.
I can't, unfortunately. This is just how Twitter displays things.
Ah, fair. Ooh, there we go. The failure of the state to deal effectively with old problems and its inability to respond to new challenges, I mean, Blair must have wrote that one. Above all, globalization and emergent global environmental change has seen political scientists tear up their textbooks and start again. They have had to acknowledge that their linear models of central decision-making by formalized institutions, but wait, C.A. Bond told us, when they try and tell us it's not that, it's a workaround for reinforcing that now, didn't he?
Yes.
Whereby policies are generated and implemented in a top-down manner. This doesn't represent the reality of contemporary politics, supposedly. Similarly, political, business and NGO figures find that the word government captures neither reality nor their ambitions for new ways of debating and resolving questions. It is in this context that the loose and open term governance has become so quickly and widely popular.
You will see it everywhere. But
and
it is,
why is it so quickly and widely popular? Because it is a method for obfuscating the central decision-making nature of the system at hand.
Yes, it's not the government. It's all the stakeholders undertaking governance.
It wipes it clean in the same way that power is wiped clean by the democratic mandate.
Yes.
But what does this all mean? We know for a fact, from this hint here, from Aaron Banks tweeting about it, from things we have had confirmed from multiple sources, that one, Matt Goodwin is the reform whisperer. He's the man giving them the pointers and the polling and the real ideas engine behind reform, it would seem.
If you want to see more about Mr. Goodwin, watch our kind of containment trilogy, especially our three of Henry Jackson Society, Policy Exchange, and Tory Removal. You will become very familiar with his document here. And by the way, we have complete confirmation that he definitely is helping, on quite a senior level, run the reform campaign. He's the author, I guess quite famously at this point from us, the author of Right Response. Oh. It's a document. Oh, dear.
This is the containment map.
Yes, sure this is the containment document. I'm
I would
find
presume
the page number here for it,
that almost all of our regular viewers are more than familiar with this document. Those who aren't, please go and look at some of our writing about it, and also just fundamentally, go and read it yourself.
Yes, I would... Again, this is the person helping to run Reform's campaign.
This is also the same man that supposedly meant to start some renegade party with Dominic Cummings at some point, whenever that comes around. But
yes,
anyway.
He's also a de-radicalization expert that has written documents like this about getting rid of the far right and spent most of his subsequent career collaborating with his former university professors to write textbooks and write books about the killing the BNP.
Yes,
and generally being a center-right hatchet man against the quote-unquote populist right and the far right.
But his opinions have changed.
Yeah, but his opinions have changed.
And Connor Tomlinson and the Lotus Eaters told me when he spoke with Matt Goodwin that his opinions have changed. So I'm going to take his word for it. But I'm going to read this little bit anyway. He's talking about populist extremist parties, which UKIP used to come under many years ago.
It's Reform would come under. He is now advising a populist extremist party that he wrote a document for how to destroy.
Yeah, this is a man whose research used to appear in Hope Not Hate.
Yes.
And was basically tipped by the British government as someone to ask, how do we deal with UKIP as a party?
As early as 2 years ago, he was still a member of Tory commissions. He was still an active member appointed to the Child Poverty Commission.
A decade ago, he is the anti-extremist researcher who's trying to help the arms of the British state fight UKIP off as an electoral and governing threat.
Yes.
Now he's working with Nigel Farage in a populist party on the fringes of politics. Now, who do you think has fundamentally changed their mind there? Who's come closer to who? Anyway, populist extremist parties are not excluded from the process, then what strategic options are left? Populist extremists work hard to turn the attention of voters away from traditional social and economic issues that tend to favour the mainstream parties. Funny that, isn't it? Radical parties follow radical ideas.
Yeah, Lomax, a decade ago I spotted Bernie Sanders. Yes, but a decade ago you didn't write for fucking Chatham House, did you?
No.
Anyway. You need to understand the difference between those two things. Yes, let us keep going.
Instead, they aim to redirect interest towards social and cultural issues that favour their own agenda, notably immigration. To capitalise on these issues, PEPs need to increase the perceived importance of these issues in the minds of the voters by making them single issues, by having effective propaganda in those regards. And it's the way that culture war issues have really been this.
Yes.
If we follow this logic, then a second response is for the mainstream parties to attempt to decrease the importance of these issues in the minds of voters. This strategy would entail avoiding or downplaying these issues and instead shifting public attention onto issues on which the mainstream party has an advantage. One example would be developing a consensual approach to divisive issues on which PEPs mobilise support, such as integration policy. and working across partisan lines to avoid the politicisation of these issues. So in short, Goodwin et al, because he's not just him on his own, he represents his own little faction of people,
yes,
adopt a Blairite position that Britain's status as a multiracial nation is already a settled question. So their job is to manage these multiracial conflicts through extra-bureaucratic measures of governance. And this is always considered necessary, again, to be a serious political party, a real electable force, and thus the issues are diffused. This may be in large part why Reform, and the Tories as well, are heavily engaging in courting the Hindu and the Sikh vote.
And the ex-Muslims and all that,
and
yes,
trying to move these people in and around different parts that's of the why British society.
That's why at the beginning of the stream you saw somebody presenting, you know, the acceptable face of Reform, which is a secular Muslim, in quotes, delivering a speech about Britons of all, you know, welcoming Britons of all
He's
races.
A secular Muslim entrepreneur that believes in capitalism and pluralism, yes, of course, my good man.
That's why you're seeing this. But the issue is that Reform has already conceded to everything to do with the civic nationalist framework of who is and isn't British. It fundamentally does not represent a situation. I know that people are panicking about this because it really is a mask slip. A lot of them kind of winked and nodded that this is the ethnic interest party for the white man. And it isn't.
No.
It really is. At its core, it's
All these attacks in the media, yes. Farage is a racist, Farage is an anti-Semite, he's an anti-Muslim, he isn't for integration in the way that we wise people are. It's bluster. It's kayfabe.
Yes.
We know fundamentally when this man has people like Matt Goodwin in his ear, then there's no way that they aren't just going down the same status quo road and framing it as something more extreme than they did last time.
It is just more Tory party. It just is. And it's the same simpering that Rishi Sunak engages in. It's the same special pleading that happens to racial groups to create these, you know, neoliberal and civic nationalist coalitions that the Conservative Party's been doing for years. It's just exactly the same thing. And if you want to see more of that, shall we watch this in full? This is the other side of Reform. This is not Nigel Farage's fake fash wave TikTok bits. This is a Richard Trice's team. And you must remember that the rest of the Reform Party is a Reform that is a party that's existed for a number of years. And they have built themselves up as this party that lets Hope Not Hate vet their candidates. You must remember that, by the way, that Hope Not Hate vetted Reform's candidates for them. Then Farage joined about a week later. It is not just Farage. It is, again, its own machinery already.
Look at this idiot in the fucking chat here before we watch this.
Yes.
They need to get in before they can repeal the Equality Act. Stop thinking about governance.
They're going to have MPs, you delusional retard. What is wrong with you? How is a party with seven MPs going to repeal the Equality Act? How is a party with seven MPs going to do anything? You're sitting there and twiddling your thumbs till 2029 and telling us that that's the only action we can take. Actually, fuck off. Seriously, I'm sick of people doing this. I'm sick of people continuously saying this to us because you are wrong. You are not only wrong, you are delusional. And when the election's over, you go, oh, wait, they've got seven MPs, they can't do anything. I will not sit here and listen to that from people. It is just, it is absolute brain rot. No, Nigel Farage is not going to repeal the Equality Act because he's going to have seven MPs. What is wrong with you people?
I know, but these MPs are going to be strong, powerful people like Mayaroon Senthilanathan. Do you not expect that he might be against the agenda of the Equality Act?
Apparently, we're all racists. Apparently, we're all bigots.
Button boom.
Apparently, we're all xenophobes. Apparently, we're all far right. Apparently, we hate foreigners or people with different coloured skin. And yet...
Have you got the clip handy?
And yet... Across this country, these people are standing for reform. A diversity of cultures. a diversity of religions, a diversity of race. We are a diverse party that our critics hate. They call us racist because they don't know how else to attack us. They call us racist because they don't know how to deal with our policies.
Let's not have chat. Worry about
people,
it any further.
Not the wealthy
because
elite.
We all know, don't we?
Well, I'll just leave it running in the background there. But yeah, this is the party with its seven MPs, by the way, that's going to repeal the Equality Act. And people are telling us to sit down and be quiet and not be blackpilled and get with the program to help this. Like, this is your solution, is it? Is this your solution to all of this? Sit and wait for this party to maybe repeal a piece of legislation in like 20 years' time.
Excuse me?
Is that the actual plan?
Excuse me, John. The left are the real racists. And we have to deal with that. No, of course the left aren't the real fucking racists. They're amateurs.
Oh, where's it? Where's it gone? Here we go. I do actually have it.
The Democrats are the real racists.
No, goddammit, we are.
It's just this over and but over let's and over and over.
Let's wind
and over again
down what we're going for, yes, going through here. As reform moves away from a purely insurgent status and has to exist as a political party with sitting MPs bound by parliamentary standards, it will necessarily shed some of the unserious populism it currently engages in. Le Pen's National Rally and Meloni's Brother of Italy have undergone this metamorphosis over the past decade into parties fit for governance. And you, as the viewer of this stream, need to fundamentally recognise the truth. In this day and age, to recognise that no one is coming to save you. No mere mortal man can remedy us from the ills of modernity. That no political body created under rational roots, I should say, can reform a society which fundamentally acts against every historical sensibility once previously held by man. How the fuck are you going to vote your way out of that?
It was just...
Zero seats? No. Zero votes.
Well, that's the point we like to make, is that all of this operation, all of this reform brain rot that people have engaged themselves in is to fold people back into the electoral framework. It's to make people think that they can have a turn on top of the machine. It's to make people think that they are able to be in control of what is going on through the electoral, through the visible and through the legitimate political process. But this is not how reality works. And to a very large extent, our political enemies acknowledge this.
Yes.
This is extraordinary. I put out a rare hit tweet today about this, that a bunch of people latched onto. But this is from the New Statesman. And the headline here is just, Biden's performance should make us grateful for the deep state. Even if it's been an autopilot, America has continued to function.
Wait, back a step. Biden's not in charge? What? Explain to me in crayon drawing how Biden isn't in charge.
You know what? I'm just going to read this whole thing because it's kind of amazing. Sobhrab Amiri is sat here writing what could very easily be, with a few tweaks, a mold bug article. This is him basically talking about the cathedral and how it functions really without the bishop there. It's just incredible. Here we go. The deep state gets a bad rap these days, especially on the American right. The permanent bureaucracy, especially the national security apparatus, pursues its own long-term plans according to its own logic, even if that means frustrating the will of elected leaders. This is just what I say. Someone at the New Statesman sat here going, oh, don't worry about Biden being a corpse. The permanent bureaucracy's in charge. This is why putting based Farage on top of the machine won't make any difference, because we have an identical political machine to America, because we've been Americanized, because we're part of the global American empire. We are a giant clockwork monstrosity of civil servants, of the NHS, of the security state sitting above it with an iron fist. You have this amazing acknowledgement of reality here, you know, but Thursday night's US presidential debate raises the question, is it such a bad thing when the elected leader in question is an 81-year-old mired in the shadowy bogs of semi-sentience? Don't worry, guys. He's not. The levers of power go nowhere.
We should all be grateful to the federal bureaucracy, a marvel of social organization whose arms reach far beyond the continental nation to embrace the
planet.
Staffed by 5 million people, if you include the military, it structures most global finance and guarantees freedom of navigation. Its important functions as a commercial imperium and thus orders the experience of billions of people to a degree few of them consciously recognize. You wouldn't want this Leviathan to falter. No. Good night, people. I have had enough. I've fucking had enough. No. That's... fuck you, Sohrab.
This is two paragraphs I would write, but with the and that's a good thing at the end of it. And just this here. It orders the experience of billions of people to a degree few of them consciously recognize. He's speaking about, like, the drone strike machine.
Mass consciousness.
Yeah, he's speaking
about... Global mass consciousness.
He's speaking about the nightmare machine, and he's saying, well, you wouldn't want the nightmare machine to function.
You wouldn't want it to switch off, now,
without the
you?
Global America, without the Glorical Empire, who would blow up the Yemeni children?
Who would fill your head with narratives and nightmares? Who would put you in debt?
Oh, my goodness. The thing is, it's the last paragraph.
Yeah, the upside of the deep state's capacity to do its own thing on a consensus autopilot, as it were, is that few of liberals' worst fears are likely to come past as Trump smashes his way past a dazed Biden to become once more the titular head of the Leviathan.
The levers of power go nowhere. If you put base Nigel on top of the managerial machine, it is still the managerial machine. If you put Trump on top of the managerial machine, it is still the managerial machine. And they're sat, like, they would, this isn't the New Statesman. And they're, we, really, as the right, in quotes, are the only people who are still saddled with democracy. They have been saddled with defending democracy. And it, really, what we need to do is create a situation where mentally you can finally let go.
Yes.
Just like Biden is not in power. You know this. I know this. The New Statement acknowledges this and gives the permanent bureaucracy a pat on the back for working without all those pesky politicians.
I think I can frame it in this way. As a viewer of this stream, there is a question you have to ask yourself. Can I fundamentally live my life with the narrative inside my head that liberal democracy is a self-perpetuating system that does nothing meaningful and basically exists to destroy your life and the lives of people you love, and that you can't fight it electorally, and you can't even really fight it as a rival faction in the way the Bolsheviks did back in 1917?
No.
The only way that you can stand up against it is reject every single one of its fantasies, which, let's be honest, ultimately give people meaning in their day-to-day lives.
Yes.
I can appreciate why they fall back on them, because that's all they have. If you can live without those, then join us. You know, be part of some subtle organization of people who are basically looking to survive whatever collapse may or may not come, or will come, in a matter of time. And if you can't, if you can't reject democracy, if you can't reject liberalism truly deep down in the core of your person, then don't go half and half. Actually, step away. I respect that in people.
Yes.
I'm sick of people, because this is ultimately what reform appeals to, isn't it?
Yes.
People who run around going, I reject democracy, I reject liberalism, but they vote for a Liberal Democrat. You know, I've said this about a million times over now, but when the left puts a picture of Nigel Farage next to a picture of Oswald Mosley,
yes,
they go, this is really serious. We have to think about it like this, because that's the way it is. Now, you might want to call them delusional, and you'd probably be right. But in the same vein, you've got a bunch of right-wing people running around going, isn't Farage just like Mosley? And they know deep down inside themselves that they are joking. Why are we not serious about it? And I know the answer to that question, because fundamentally we're not allowed to be.
No.
And what I'm saying is, if that's the case, then stop being half in and half out. You're not subverting this system. You're not taking it over. You're not voting your way out of here. Honestly, admit defeat. Recuperate and rebuild.
We will say to you, fundamentally, the electoral process has nothing for you because it is, like I said, it's part of a giant machine that hates you. And I don't know how many times we can make that point. And yes. I don't know how many times that people can, again, return to the electoral framework, as I always say, like a dog returning to eat its own vomit again.
We'll get the last couple of bits of chats here before
yes,
we go.
I have a donation via the Ko-Fi. Thank you, Thug Life Bear, for the £3. Yes, from Benevolent, the rest of my family are dead set on immigrating to the UK. As someone who fucked around and wasted the better part of a decade on a futile effort in New York for the same reasons, I might be the only member of my entire neighborhood that sees the danger. What do? I don't know. Are they? I'm not sure about the situation. Send me a DM with a bit more detail. And I could probably give you a bit of advice on that because I know people who've been luckily. My advice really is that if you have community links somewhere, don't leave them.
Yes.
Because there's nowhere to run. Really, people talk about South America, people talk about other places, but you should stand and fight where you are if that's where you're from and that's your community and that's where you feel you belong. If you have no community and you're looking for one, maybe that's a different story, but I would always advise people to try and stay where their roots are, whatever they may be.
Yes, we've got Bogged Down for $10. Should we hope the current system is maintained until we have a decent replacement ready? Would the new system have a vitality that would be hard for us to overcome? No, we want the current system to collapse as quickly and as smoothly as possible so that there's still something called Britain left at the end of the day. And fundamentally, we don't want a new system. We want the negation of the system as it exists.
Yes. What will come after will be different, but it will be forged in a way that we can't even imagine in many cases.
And another cynical Brit with a tenor says, honestly, some of the only people left I can listen who talk about politics. To me, it feels like Groundhog Day every 5 years, the same playbook over and over and over again. People never wake up. Yeah, that's the whole purpose. They want you fatigued, and they want you to constantly engage in a farce that's ultimately going to never get you anywhere.
They can just do this forever, because they have.
Yeah.
And the only thing that stops them doing this forever is entropy. It is physical reality. It is the fact that they are consuming what is left of the Western world. It's intellectual resources. It's racial resources. It's intellectual resources and wearing its history like a skin suit. But that is unsustainable. In all the ways we point out, we are not people who believe there's going to be a sudden collapse. It will take a series of years. There isn't going to be a calamity, but you will wake up one day and the lights will be out under this current system. It simply cannot maintain itself. It runs out of internal energy and eventually it will simply rust in place. That is our contention. And again, our contention is exactly the same as that New Statesman article, that it doesn't really matter politically who is in power, because the permanent bureaucracy, the deep state in quotes, is always in power.
Yes.
Because it is the government, it is the state.
And this is why everybody out there is a retard and they think that celebrating Hope Not Hate getting suspended on Twitter means there's a change. I'm sorry, but MI5 will always be there. And it's when they're gone
yes.
that we'll actually have discussions about change. I think we've got very little else to add, though. So thank you for doing the watchings. And do you know what the thing is, right? What happens to, like, Sunak? Does he just become, like, a Facebook, like, exec in, like, 6 weeks' time and no one ever hears about him again?
He'll cook up with some Indian company, probably. He'll be some sort of special envoy. Anyway.
Anyway, thank you for watching. Never late, never black-pilled.
Never again.
And go to the pub.
Go to the pub!